Welcome back, guys, to the A-List Lowdown. Roundup. It used to be the Roundup. Now it's the A-List Lowdown. But whatever it is, it's March 26th, 2025. We're coming at you with thanks, Royal Highness, and collaborate, convene, and coordinate. And a bunch of
I might have got it wrong. I put cooperate on it.
Collaborate, convene, and coordinate. No, that's right.
Okay.
It doesn't say cooperate.
Oh. Okay.
The locals ain't working, but who cares? Not worth the trouble. Anyway, yeah, it's a crazy week. It's a crazy week. I mean, Carney it's weird to see the media do anything. You know, I feel like they never used to push Trudeau on some stuff that they're kind of pushing Carney on, which is weird to see. And he doesn't handle it well. He really does not handle any pushback well. That's just this. I mean, when you're a head central banker, you're probably not used to getting told no. Even when people think you're an idiot, they like keep it to themselves, you know, and talk about you after you're out of the room.
Yeah, exactly. He's not used to it. Like you said, he's a yes man, a corporate guy. He's putting all these global like net zero things together, and he's working for all these, you know, funds and Brookfield and all that. It's a little bit different, right? When you have the microphones in your face and people are like asking you. I mean, it is interesting how the media seems to be kind of asking them some tough questions. I mean, and he called PP a conspiracy theorist today.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah, I mean, he's going to say something crazy. It's going to he's going to say something completely unhinged here. Or he's going to have a freak out. There's a meltdown coming. Like something is going to happen.
He walked off tonight too, I think. Did you see that one where he just walked off?
And did you see like the automakers? He was like expecting a hand or something like that.
Oh, no. I have that.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let me start. Let's start. Let's get into the show. We don't want to bore you guys with the Ramblers. If you do want to hear Ramblers, we have another show called The Grim America Show. You can check out. We ramble all the time over there, but let's jump into it over here. I'm going to jump right into it with this tweet. This is a tweet from Ryan Gerritsen in the morning, Ryan. Which one were we doing? We were going to try this one, right? Or do you want to go back to the other
one? Yeah, no, let's do this. Let's try this. Yeah.
Okay, so this is, wow, the opening statement from
We might have to zoom in
a little bit. I'll zoom it in, yeah. I want to read this first. So the opening statement from the House Judiciary Committee regarding the climate cartel, which GFANS, remember we talked about GFANS a couple weeks ago on the show? Mark Carney's climate alliance is implicated in. I think he founded it, didn't he? I can't remember exact details, but something tells me we're going to find out. This is an antitrust and collusion investigation. Every word in this statement is exactly what Carney has been making financial institutions and companies do. This is who we want running our country. So now let's jump to this.
It's unbelievable, dude. It is unbelievable how much is coming out. Like you said, there's people talking about this going back to 2016 when the WEF was getting into all this stuff too, the ESG and all that. There's people talking about this one. I mean, the GFANS. This is about the GFANS, right?
Yes. Okay. I'm going to play this clip. In the meantime, can you check and see if it is Carney that founded that? I mean, I should know because we
founded what?
The GFANS.
Yeah.
Because I swear we just did this like 2 weeks ago, but we make so much content, it's hard to keep up sometimes. But let's listen to this clip.
It's the legendary economist and Nobel laureate Milton Friedman.
It's echoing.
Explained, quote, there has never in
what?
It's echoing. I don't know if that's the clip. I don't think it's the clip.
It's not the clip, but this is how it wanted it done the last time. I mean,
it seems like it's StreamYard and not us. It really does.
So I'm not going to use this thing then. I'm turning off the toggle that it's wanted on for the last 3 weeks. Let's see what happens.
As the legendary economist and Nobel laureate Milton Friedman explained, quote, there has never in history been a more effective machine for eliminating poverty than the free enterprise system and the free market. Collusion, on the other hand, raises prices and reduces both output and consumer choice. Thus, antitrust law aims to protect competition and prohibit collusion. In fact, the Supreme Court has described collusion as, quote, the supreme evil of antitrust. Despite these long-standing economic and legal principles, the climate cartel is engaged in anti-competitive collusion to impose radical environmental, social, and governance, or ESG, goals on the American people. In his testimony to this committee, Andrew Behar highlighted the three C's of collusion. They collaborate, convene, and coordinate. Gee, it's like you wanted to say the word collusion, but you didn't say it. So you asked ChatGPT to give me an alliteration to go to the thesaurus and find three words that are like collusion, but not collusion. These were his words: collaborate, convene, and coordinate with other members of the climate cartel to impose their ideological agenda on the American people. This climate cartel consists of left-winged activists, dominant financial institutions, and the groups and initiatives that facilitate the collusion among them. Specifically, groups like Climate Action 100 Plus expressly require the investors who join them to pressure the companies they invest in to, quote, decarbonize and reach net zero emissions. Asset owners like California Public Employees Retirement System, or CalPERS, and asset managers like Arjuna Capital then use the investments they control to force companies to disclose their carbon emissions, to reduce their carbon emissions, and to adopt governance mechanisms that enforce these commitments, even though these commitments are bad for investors and consumers. The climate cartel engages in a series of escalating pressure tactics to force American companies to act against their own self-interest and adopt its desired left-wing policies. First, the climate cartel leverages its investment holdings to demand meetings with corporate management. If corporations refuse to cave, the climate cartel then escalates to filing shareholder resolutions demanding that companies take action. Groups like Climate Action 100 Plus then, quote, flag these resolutions, drawing greater attention to them and making them even more effective. If companies still fail to bow to its demands, the climate cartel then seeks to replace members of their boards of directors. Notably, the climate cartel did so at ExxonMobil in 2021, replacing three directors with members of its own choosing. The climate cartel's commitment and demands reduce output and raise prices for American consumers. There's no way to reach, quote, net zero without reducing production and diminishing the American standard of living. These negative impacts are especially pronounced in the fossil fuel, aviation, and agricultural sectors. In other words, the very industries that allow Americans to drive, fly, and eat. For example, the climate cartel has said that fossil fuels must, quote, stay in the ground to reduce carbon emissions. Similarly, the climate cartel has called for reducing the number of airplane flights by 12% and capping passenger air travel to 2019 levels. Likewise, the climate cartel has called for cutting American beef consumption roughly in half because, quote, cows are the new coal. This sort of anti-competitive collusion has been illegal under the U.S. antitrust laws for more than a century. Yet the Biden administration has refused to take action to enforce the law and protect American consumers. In today's hearing, we will investigate the climate cartel, its anti-competitive collusion, and the harm it continues to inflict on the American economy and people.
What'd you find out?
Oh, it's fantastic. I mean, that's a great clip. I had that too, so I'll take that off my list there. While Mark Carney was a key figure in the creation and leadership of the Glasgow Financial Alliance for Net Zero, GFANZ, he co-founded the initiative in April 2021 ahead of the COP26 climate summit in Glasgow in his role as the UN Special Envoy for Climate Action and Finance. Alongside Bloomberg, he served as co-chair, which aimed to unite financial institutions such as banks, asset managers, and insurers into a coalition committed to aligning their lending and investment activities with the goal of achieving net zero greenhouse gas emissions by 2050. I thought there was some of it about 2030 too, though. So I've got a little bit more on that if you want me to do that. Or
I also have more, so maybe okay. I'll jump back.
You keep going then. And
this is a bit of an older article. Oh my God. This is a bit of an older article, but let's go through it here. Anyway, Terry Newman, Mark, this kind of is going to be a little more implication on Mark Carney. Mark Carney's plan for a global climate domination. Just before entering the liberal race, he was accused by White House Republicans of being part of a green cartel.
There he is. United Nations.
Mark Carney's greatest skill appears to be his remarkable ability to find a soft landing when things get complicated. I wonder where he's going to softly land here. Is he going to be the prime minister? Is he just going to just bail last minute? I mean, right now he's got to be thinking, I've made a huge mistake.
Oh, yeah. I don't know if he's ready for this, really.
Yeah, I don't think he's ready for it. His most recent exit was on January 15th from GFANS, an organization he founded and co-chaired, which is now being investigated by the U.S. House Judiciary Committee for allegedly violating antitrust laws by pressuring companies to adopt net zero goals. Whatever political motivations may be behind this probe, it indicates a major decline in popularity for the kind of climate-focused agenda Carney had been pushing.
I mean, it makes you wonder if the guy didn't just like, because even if he doesn't get become prime minister and he's still just like the leader of the Liberal Party, is it harder to get like prosecuted by the U.S. for some shit if you're like a politician in Canada? Is it more likely that you'll just get a slap on the wrist or like a talking to behind the curtain type thing? You know, I mean, it starts to be maybe a reason to dip into this, right? It's like, you know, that's your one shot.
Oh my God. It could be protection, dude. Because that's why Biden, that's my theory on why Biden ran.
Because they can't arrest out of the Liberal Party of Canada. It's weird, right? It'd be weird if the U.S. started coming and arresting our politicians. Even if they're not the prime minister, it would be weird.
Yeah.
Probably more trouble than it's worth.
That's why Biden tried to run in 2024 until he got knocked out, because it was still protection, because you really couldn't attack the whole crime family.
And what did Carney do the day after his resignation from GFANS? He officially threw his hat into the Liberal leadership race, hoping to become party leader and Prime Minister of Canada. The Glasgow Financial Alliance for Net Zero, GFANS, was launched by Carney, who was then UN Special Envoy on Climate Action and Finance in April 2021. The organization was set up as a UN-backed global coalition of financial and banking institutions in order to accelerate the transition to net zero by 2050 in line with the Paris Agreement. GFANS operate like an umbrella, uniting various sector-specific alliances. Net Zero Asset Managers, NZAM, which was launched in December 2020 and predates GFANS, for example, is under the umbrella. GFANS' most recent troubles appear to have started on June 11, 2024, when the Republican-nominated Judiciary Committee in Washington released a report titled Climate Control, Exposing the Decarbonization Collusion in Environment, Social, and Governance Investing. The report alleged that GFANS is part of a climate cartel which colludes to decarbonize companies by leveraging negotiations with management, shareholder resolutions, and board of director votes. According to the committee, this cartel forces committees to disclose their carbon emissions, reduce their carbon emissions, and enforce their disclosure and reduction commitments by handcuffing and restricting company management. So, skip down. Some of this was repeated in the clip, of course. Then on December 20th of last year, the pressure on GFANS increased, albeit indirectly. The same committee sent letters demanding information, communications, and documents to over 60 U.S.-based asset managers in regards to their involvement with GFANS. Documents related to what the committee calls GFANS' collusive activity are to be used to inform potential legislative reforms. On December 31st, GFANS suddenly decided it would restructure. According to environmental advocacy group Global Canopy, GFANS was originally an umbrella group for various financial institution net zero alliances that has now shifted to a less ambitious group formed by specific financial institution executives. GFANS' focus suddenly changed as well, shifting to direct capital towards investments in energy transition, when only recently its focus was the more aggressive goal of phasing out financing for activities that do not align with the Paris Agreement. In addition, GFANS appears to have suddenly had a change of heart about requiring members to align with the Paris Agreement targets. Was GFANS' restructuring and focus change related to the committee's request for information? Who can tell? Relatedly, several major U.S. banks who had been the focus of other similar investigations exited GFANS' Net Zero Banking Alliance in December and January, including Goldman Sachs, Citi, Bank of America, Wells Fargo, and Morgan Stanley.
And BlackRock, apparently, too.
Were these precipitous exits likely a result of growing skepticism towards these banks' ESG agenda? It appears with GFANS, Carney found himself in an uncomfortable situation, or at least a position that was quickly drained of prestige. I guess ruling Canada is a pretty okay consolation prize after the organization you founded to direct global investments towards climate experiences a mass exodus. To be fair, Carney and the Liberals have been courting each other for years. So, I don't know if we need to get, all right, let's, I'll read the last two paragraphs at least. How far would his global climate ambitions go? If he was indeed part of a climate cartel, as the admittedly political House committee alleges, what would happen to firms that didn't join GFANZ's various initiatives? Would they be shunned? If so, would being shunned affect which industries and projects received financial backing? I guess we'll have to wait until the House Judiciary Committee sorts through those requested communications and documents to find out. Canadians should be taking Carney's ambitions into account, as he is likely to lead the Liberals into the next election. Judging by his moves to date, it doesn't seem like his aspirations will suddenly shift from a global to a Canadian focus. As Prime Minister, Carney's likely to be decidedly, obsessively one note. Da-da-da. It's kind of lame that I have to keep switching around. It should just do it automatically, but I could probably figure that out in the back end someplace. So I have some more Carney stuff. I have the thing from the thing, but I don't the actual report from the Judiciary Committee, which I don't think we really need to get into here.
Okay.
But that's sort of the last, like, you can probably finish that, and then I've got another one, a small collection of clips.
Yeah, let's just finish off this because I had this one too. This is from Trish Wood is critical. She was starting to write all this up, and then because it started to gain ground, she threw out what she had. This is kind of incomplete, but she's talking about climate cartel Carney, why he quietly left floundering net zero investing. So I'm going to skip through all the stuff that you've already covered. But just rather some, that's weird. That audio showed up in here for some reason. Just a couple quick things here. So here's another GFANZ Carney reference that would utterly destroy Alberta's economy. I suspect Premier Smith may have read this. On the consumption side, reaching net zero would require draconian declines in the use of coal, oil, and gas, as much as 98% of coal for coal, 94% for oil, and 86% for fossil fuels overall. Thus, as you saw, President and Chief Counsel Danielle Fugier testified that ultimately fossil fuel use has to be reduced. Likewise, Carbon Tracker has stated that the use of oil, gas, and coal will need to peak and fall in absolute terms, and soon. GFANZ has said that global oil supplies must fall between 55% to 79%, and gas supplies between 54 to 93% by 2050. I always thought this was 2030. Maybe there's some other 2030 stuff. Further, GFANZ co-chair Mark Carney testified to the committee that more than half of the world's coal reserves need to stay in the ground in order for the world to be in line with Paris. And then here's more dogma here from GFANZ. No new oil and natural gas fields are needed in the net zero pathway. And thus, no new oil and gas fields must be developed. One Climate Action 100 Plus member succinctly stated, there is no need for any new oil. Similarly, GFANZ has stated that there is no rationale for financing new coal projects. But, you know, of course, China, go ahead, right? Three a week or one every 3 days. So here's just a quick timeline thing. So this is since the committee began releasing its findings. The reach of the net zero partners has diminished. I mean, honestly, this is good news, right? I mean, this is all coming out. Hopefully, this is going to fall apart. Not that there's not going to be something coming in its place, but because his net zero project was falling apart, he was available to run for prime minister. So this is the timeline. June 11th, 2024, the interim report, judiciary investigation announcing a climate cartel. So that's back to summer last year, almost a year ago now. December 17th, the big investment houses bail from the cartel. Climate leader, Climate 100 Plus. January 6th, it restructures, like you mentioned. January 13th, announcement that BlackRock and others have left Carney's GFANZ group. January 15th, he steps down. January 16th, 3 days after the GFANZ exodus, Carney announces leadership run. So, yeah, I mean, it's pretty fascinating. It's all coming out. I mean, it's so frustrating. I really hope it falls apart. It's because it's just, you know, this is all, you know, from our back. It's off of our backs, right? That's what's so frustrating. I've got more about, I mean, King Charles was in on this. I mean, it's they were all in on it, right?
Well, let's just jump down around, and I got some more carny stuff. We'll just keep pulling on this. I want to get to the King Charles stuff, though.
It's quite a bit. So
this is from David Jacobs. I want you to listen carefully to what Carney is saying about emission caps. He hides the truth and complexity. His answer is also filled with falsehoods. It's astonishing how brazen he is. So I think this is a whole clip. We don't need to play the whole thing. We'll come down because he's kind of broken it up here. So Carney states that reducing emissions from production and distribution of oil and gas will increase their competitiveness. That is simply not true. 97% of Canadian oil and gas is consumed by the U.S., which has no emissions-based barrier to trade. Let's see if this works.
I'm focused on, as the government is, on getting emissions down from the production and transportation of conventional oil and gas. Okay, that's good for the environment. It ultimately will be good for the competitiveness of those producers and the distribution of that. I'm focused on, as the government
is. How do I stop it now? There we go. So Carney goes on to say that what's required is investment. He talks about investment in carbon capture. What he doesn't talk about is investment in pipelines, LNG, exporting plants, or oil refineries. His focus remains on reducing emissions, not increasing production.
What's required is investment. Investment in carbon capture and storage technology, investment in reducing fugitive methane, methane flaring,
other fugitive aspects, methane.
What's required is investment.
That's the worst kind.
What's required is
investment. That's the worst kind. So Carney finishes by saying that an emission cap is there and the urgent problem is decreasing emissions. Carney is making emissions reduction a problem that needs to be solved prior to expanding production.
So the cap is there. The issue is getting the investments down. How are we going to get them down? I'm focused on that. We're making progress in unlocking that. We need to continue to work on it.
So Carney is a man that believes that so long as he is technically correct, he isn't lying. We saw that when he falsely claimed he didn't move Brookfield to the U.S. He is burying his intent under complexity, but the truth isn't buried deep. Anyway, that's just more. I got one more Carney clip that's unrelated to climate stuff that we could finish up with when you're done your thing.
Okay, well, I have one more climate Carney one. So this is from Ryan Gerritsen too, and this is where he says we need to get to a point where every financial institution is taking climate change into account. Financial decision. We need to ultimately get to a point. Oh, and then I mess up the ding dong, and then I mess up the clip, I think. Can you hear it?
Where
yeah.
Decisions taking climate change into account, the impact on the transition. And we actually drop the adjective sustainable because it's just what finance professionals do. Secondly, on the risk side, we need the banks to look at the risks around the climate transition, which then flip to opportunities. On the opportunity side, it's really about looking for and at transition plans from all companies and backing those who are part of the solution and taking capital away from those who are part of the problem.
So the problem, right? Part of the problem. I mean, you're going to hear this from a surprise guest on a surprise clip on the show who's talking directly to the king about doing the right thing, right? And what's good. Like, so heat pumps are okay, right? But other things aren't. So these people get to decide what's okay and what we can transition our money into and not. I mean, it's infuriating. So here's the one with him. You mentioned this clip of him when the iron with the are they steel workers here? There's a rack of pipes there, so maybe it must be. Okay, a lot of people complain that I only posted a 3-second video without context. Here is the full context. King Carney is ordering his vassals to cheer for his arrival.
This isn't even the one. This is a different one.
The brave iron workers didn't comply and wanted to nothing to do with the UK banker. This is the context. Are you ready? So I'm going to rewind that because he gives like a backhand. Have you seen the backhand? It's not like a
WAP thing.
It's like a backhand. Like, what are you doing? Like he's doing this. And I thought he was doing this maybe to some faraway reporters or something when I didn't have the context. Now we have the context. He's doing it in front of all the iron workers. Like, what a dick. And they walk up here, Carney and his henchman there. And look, he walked up to this guy. I saw a post from this guy standing there with the black helmet, and he said, they forced us to go up there. And I said, I wasn't going to shake his hand. So I didn't shake his hand. So Carney walks up to the guy and he just looks at him like that. Wouldn't shake his hand.
But, all right.
Well, hello, everyone. And
we're all just sitting there not
this here. Announcement and those who are visiting us.
I'd be chirping them. That was me.
Capital City. And the city of festivals. And so good afternoon, and today is an exciting day. We're working.
He mentions something like Carney mentioned something like the guys, you guys aren't excited or something like that. You hear it under his breath. You couldn't really hear it, but.
Well, this is TFR, who were nice enough to give us a follow on Twitter and tweet out a bunch of our stuff, which is super cool. It's always cool when someone doesn't just retweet it. They go to the point of like.
Yeah.
Reposting it all. So we appreciate those guys. Thanks for listening. And here is the CCFR posted this on Twitter today. This is another Carney at the automotive stuff, because I think he's giving him $2 billion or something like that to help, retrain him to help make better cars. It's more likely that you're retraining him to do new jobs or to get out of the country to go build cars down south. I don't know. He said the Liberal Party is going to buy some cars, but I don't know that they're going to buy 350,000.
Everyone hear me? Hopefully not. If you're lucky, you can't hear me. If you're unfortunate, you're close, you can hear me. Mark Carney, Prime Minister. We've got Chris Sutton, who is a former millwright, who's running for MP in Essex. So if you're in Essex or know anyone in Essex and you want someone in Parliament who actually knows what he's doing, he's our guy. And Eric Merrick, who is the MP here in Windsor, and nobody knows more in politics about the auto industry than Eric. Union auto industry than Eric. Look, I'll just say a couple of things. First, thank you for, sorry to interrupt. Thanks to the team here for taking me around, showing us what you do. It's hugely impressive. And we all know that we're facing.
Is that like a Trumpism? Hugely impressive.
I guess so.
Right, with Trump and the tariffs and everything. And I just want to say what we're doing about it to make sure that we come out on top. And I'm going to say some specifics, but I'm going to give you the big picture, which is Americans are hurting themselves. So look, thank you for everything you're doing. The government's here for you. These guys are here for you. I'm the spokesperson. They're the experts. Thank you.
That's a great clip.
I mean, it's unbelievable how underwhelmed they are. It really is sort of.
It's great to see. Because also, I mean, you saw that lineup around Pierre Poilievre's rally. Like, he was in a plant, and it did seem a little bit more natural. It seemed like the guys were actually pretty excited. They were talking to him. Like, it really does feel like the working man. I mean, not the boomer people. I mean, have you seen that thing about the boomers that are over basically like over 60? They're voting Liberal, but there's a huge disparity between like the TV watching boomers and everybody else. But anyways, Pierre's lineup was three times around the bit, like it was around the building, like three lengths longer than the street or something like that. Anyways, it was a massive lineup, and it seems like I think he should be renting out the Coliseums and seeing how many people can back in there. I mean, he's
the Coliseum. You know, I mean, like what? the hockey rinks.
Well, some bigger venues. He's jamming in these small venues, and then the media is saying, "Oh, there was not enough seats for the supporters," and they're making.
Yeah, you're better off though. You're better off with a jammed small venue than even like a half full hockey rink is going to look hurt. You know.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, maybe not like a Coliseum, but something in the middle, like a couple thousand seats at least, right? Something that not these little conference rooms that don't have enough space for people.
Part of the problem is that, I mean, he just came out with a major tax cut for seniors today. That's like, you know, it's gonna be
the
old ones do. Some of them
the
do.
Old ones. Okay. Maybe, yeah.
It's a mix. Half the seniors are doing all right, and the other. I mean, here's just another. This is my last Carney clip. This is just a short one.
Okay, but just to expand on that, the boomers that I was mentioning were the well-to-do boomers, like not the seniors on pensions.
Rich boomers, yeah.
Not even rich, not poor.
I think this is Carney Tonight.
There's diversity and then there's diversity.
I don't know. You can't really hear, but someone yelled at him about how many kids he got into on Epstein.
Really? Wow.
Yeah. So I do have one more Carney clip. Do you want to play it and just get all the Carney stuff out of the way?
Sure.
This one's been going around too, but this is actually from a lady over in the UK. It's probably worth playing here, I think, for Canadians that are undecided.
I think it is extraordinary that Mark Carney has become the Prime Minister of Canada. He did a terrible job in Britain of the governorship of the Bank of England. He created a lot of the problems that blew up on my watch and that I got blamed for were actually created by him. He backed Labour in the election and Rachel Reeves's policies, which are leading the country to bankruptcy. So why on earth the Liberal Party of Canada has selected this man, I have no idea. And I think it is illegitimate that this guy has never been elected as a member of parliament in Canada. I'm utterly puzzled. And, you know, the Canadians, now I'm not going to tell the Canadians how to vote. Obviously I want the Conservatives to be elected in Canada, but I think it's Justin Trudeau has pursued a lot of the same policies that Europe has been pursuing. And America has raced ahead of us. Back at the turn of the millennium, the average Brit was catching up with the average American in terms of income per head.
Wow.
We are now $34,000 a year behind. We are poorer than Mississippi, which is the poorest American state. And the same is true. The same is true of France and Germany and to some extent of Canada. Because they pursued all of these woke policies, the Bank of England. Oops,
not to some extent, lady. I mean, we are all the way in the...
of these policies. So I don't know what is going on in Canada, but in the same way as I think people in Britain need to wake up to what the real threat to our country is, I think they need to wake up in Canada.
So there you have it. That was
I mean, it's too late. I hate to say it's too late when we're in the middle of an election, because maybe it's not, but I just don't have the faith that we're going to get anything like what's happening down south with us. So.
Well, I don't know. I mean, it is starting to get interesting because Pierre has been sort of sitting on his hands for a while, right? He comes out with a huge, big tax cut for seniors. I think it's about like 10,000 more of their pension they can get tax-free. And how about this one? What happened? Did you change that? Don't change it. You don't touch anything. That's a rule. No touching. So let's jump over to this. This is from the Fraser Institute. Again, this is a little bit of an older one, but I hadn't actually heard it out of Pierre's mouth yet. Now he's actually campaigning on it now that the campaign has started. And I mean, as far as I'm concerned, this should wrap up the Indigenous vote in Canada. I don't think that there's anything the Liberals can do other than outright stealing it. And I made a point to make sure I sent this out to my Indigenous Opinions mailing list today to make sure that they understand the implications of this. So here's how First Nations can access a reliable source of revenue. So I'll just read this article, and now he has come out and officially announced it today, and a couple chiefs have already commented on it. So according to Pierre Poilievre, a conservative government would permit First Nations to directly receive tax revenues from resource development on their ancestral territories. Political leaders of all parties should commit to such direct taxation because time is short. So basically, I think what they're proposing is a 50% split. So if you have a company on Treaty 9 land, then Treaty 9 gets 50% of the money. And the other 50% goes to the federal government.
But no. But it's tax money, though. It's not revenue. That's what I don't understand. Why wouldn't it be revenue?
Tax money. No, it should be. Well, it can be revenue if they want to start a company that extracts oil or you know, you only get the revenue if you do the work. So
no, but it's not revenue. It's revenue, but it's based on taxes.
Yeah, that's right. That's what I'm saying. If you want the revenue from a mine, you got to build the fucking mine. You can't be giving Indians free mines. That's not right. I'm an Indian.
I'm just saying a percentage, like maybe a 10% royalty.
Now the taxes is good enough. They're getting taxed at 40%. So
we don't want taxes at all. I mean, it kind of solidifies the tax system, which
taxes aren't going anywhere, dude. I mean,
they might be down there. I mean, what if Trump comes in and says, "Oh, you're going to get 50% of the tax back. That's it. Come down here, you get 50% of the complete revenue."
Yeah, but it doesn't matter. They're not going to cut the taxes.
What I'm saying is, like, what if you know, Orange Man Bad does?
Well, that doesn't matter because the difference between what we're talking about here is that you can't just make fucking gold in the States.
I mean, we're talking about
pulling up the stuff that we've got tons of in Ontario and the Canadian Shield, in Saskatchewan and Alberta, it's oil and natural gas. In Ontario, it's all kinds of lithium, it's all kinds of gold, it's all kinds
uranium.
Of uranium's in Saskatchewan most. Yes. So now, you know, like I say, if natives want to make a gold company mine and they want to get the revenue, that's fine. But now instead of the tax going to the government and the government taking all that tax and then putting it on the dole to the Indian reserves, and you have to jump through these hoops and you have to do this and you have to do that, try and get the grants. And now you're on the thumb of the government. So you can only do this, that, and the other. What are you going to do with the money? We're going to do this. We're going to do that. You know, once these nations can start directly getting that tax money, it cuts out all this sort of subservience that you need to have right now. Now you don't need to, it really starts to open the pathway for, now you've got money coming in for lawyers. Now you get all sorts of different things can start to take place under this model. So faced with the prospect of tariffs and other, I get what you mean. No taxes would be great for anyone, but that's not, you know.
I'm not even saying no taxes, but just based it on revenue, not just taking taxes. That's all.
It should be based on revenue. I'm assuming it would be based on...
Well, the taxes will be based on revenue, but then they're taking 50% of those taxes back, which is good. I like the idea, but I just not sure if I like it based on taxes.
I mean, the preference would be that the Indian Act is over and the Indians own certain sections of land and it's up to them to yeah. But, you know, that's obviously where I'd like to see things get, but that's not on the table right now. You know, that's not close. This is the closest step in this direction that Indians have seen in probably 150 years. So Canada must build new energy infrastructure, mine critical minerals, and diversify trade. First Nations participation is critical in these plans, but too often proposed infrastructure and resource projects on their territories become mired in lengthy negotiations that benefit only bureaucrats and lawyers. The First Nations Resource Charge, the FNRC, a brainchild of the First Nations Tax Commission, could help cut through some of that red tape. Currently, First Nations, the federal government, and businesses negotiate agreements through a variety of mechanisms that establish the financial, environmental, and cultural terms for a proposed development. As part of any agreement, Ottawa collects tax revenue from the project, then remits a portion of that revenue to the First Nation. The process is bureaucratic, time-consuming, and paternalistic. Under one version of the proposed charge, the First Nation would directly collect a portion of the federal corporate tax from the developer. The federal government, in turn, would issue the corporation an equivalent tax credit. In effect, Ottawa would transfer tax points to First Nations. The resource charge doesn't mean we won't say no to bad projects where the costs to us are too high, said Chief Darren Blaney of BC's Amalco First Nation when the Conservatives first laid out the proposal last year. It could mean, however, that good projects happen faster. This is what we all want. Pluvio referenced the proposed tax transfer in his February 15th rally. He then vowed to remove regulatory obstacles to fast-track resource development projects. We will incentivize Indigenous leaders to support these projects by letting companies pay a share of their federal corporate taxes to local First Nations. I want First Nations people of Canada to be the richest people in the world. The First Nations Tax Commission first came up with the idea. Paul Avera's federal Conservatives are the first political party to embrace it. But there's no reason why support for resource charges could not be bipartisan. Mark Carney, the front-running candidate to succeed Justin Trudeau as Liberal leader and prime minister has vowed to use all the powers of the federal government to accelerate the major projects that we need. That said, resistance has already emerged. Many, most Indigenous leaders would see right through because we've been around that corner a few times. Don Martin Hill, professor emeritus of Indigenous studies at McMaster University, told the Canadian Press, selling your soul to have what other Canadians have, which is access to clean drinking water. See, this is, you know, this guy's actually blocked me on Twitter because he's a woke fake Indian, in my opinion, but I don't want to get on here. But Professor Martin Hill inadvertently makes the case for the FNRC. Municipal governments raise funds by taxing the property of individuals and businesses and using the revenue to, among other things, provide clean drinking water. A First Nation that taxed a business operating on its territory and used the revenue to provide clean drinking water for people on reserve would simply be doing what governments are supposed to do, and it would be doing for itself, which is better than having the fucking government do it in the first place. Like I say, my best solution would be to give them the land, to negotiate the land deals and get that just out of the way. Any government committed to implementing the FNRC should convene a working group of First Nations leaders, private sector executives, and government officials to work out a framework agreement. If the Conservatives win the next election, a working group could be part of a task force on tax reform that Paul Avera said he intends to establish. The FNRC would be voluntary. Communities could opt in or opt out. Provincial governments might also participate, sharing a portion of their taxes with First Nations. If it works, the charge could speed up the approval of lumber, mining pipelines, and other resource-related projects on the traditional lands of First Nations. So, I mean, that's the most talk we've got on anything on that front in an awful long time.
Yeah, that's good. Awesome. One step closer to 51. All right. Okay, can I start on the monarchy? And
I think there was a press conference today, actually.
Oh, yeah?
Downtown Calgary about just that.
Oh, wow. That would have been cool to see.
Delegation. Yeah, the delegation is dead. Marty Wet. I'll check Marty's Twitter feed while you're doing that to see if he's got anything.
Well, I'm doing I want your feedback on this, though, too. I need you to be here with me on this one.
I'm always here because I can do more than one thing at once.
All right. Well, okay. This is, how we talked about, why would King Charles sell Canada to the U.S., right? Have you heard the thing about Trump talking about the U.S. becoming part of the UK Commonwealth, like the greater kind of,
everyone is freaking out.
Right. I mean, how weird is that? Right. I really want to know what you think about, like, why would Trump even throw that out there? And maybe it's part of a greater plan, but let's go through the email. I have an email from a listener that, cause when we were talking about this a few weeks back, he emailed us. Right. And I want to know what you think about this. And then I'm going to play a couple of clips about Trump, saying this, and then also how connected our new leaders are with the king. So why would King Charles sell Canada to the U.S.? He is in full control of the charter. So A, he is in full control of the charter and tired of seeing the other power families or the Khazarian mafia or the whoever power families destroy and slowly take over his countries, mostly with their use of immigration. So he has teamed up with the USA in a business merger behind the scenes to gain more power to combat it. Or B, Her Majesty's Most Honorable Privy Council, at the start of the BNA, which is the British North America Act, is actually pertaining to the real power behind her. Could it include the dynastic power families going back to the Roman Empire? Could the forming of the USA and each of the US states being turned into corporations back in 1871 all be connected to this Privy Council power? Do all roads still lead to Rome? Is there an ongoing battle between Roman power families and Khazarian power families fighting over America and the likes of Musk and Trump and everything that's been going on be a huge power play? That might explain the burning down and destruction of propaganda Hollywood, the war in Ukraine, Khazaria, etc. Or C, same as B, except Canada was supposed to be a strong country, including Quebec, but they never came to bat in 1982, 1987, 1992. So the Privy Council finally threw their hands up and said, fine, Canada is falling behind, so we're just going to merge Canada, including Quebec, with the rest of their holdings of America, and that will be the end of the language issue, and they can move on in their world power building. Which is why the president made an issue of declaring English the official language of America. Sure, there is the Spanish issue, but still, Quebec should not have held Canada hostage. So now they are going to be forced into English or truly separate, which would make them very weak in North America. Or D, any combination of the above, and King Charles and or the Privy Council had just been waiting for the Queen to pass. Because she was the one holding out on merging the U.S. and Canada. That's interesting. This is just my quick theories, and I'm not putting too much thinking into it, but something is surely going on. Bet this would make a good show to discuss. Thanks again for everything, Dan. And thanks for the email, Dan.
Thanks, Dan. I mean, dude, you know what I just noticed? While I was looking at Marty's thing, Rogan had fucking Suzanne Humphries on.
See? That's unbelievable, dude.
That is crazy.
And people were, I saw a post about Maha, the top like ex people to follow, right? In the Maha movement or whatever. Cause I keep thinking, you know, there's still like our peer group, our sort of conspiracy culture peer group. They're all still like, oh, this is a PSYOP. That's a PSYOP. Like they don't seem to celebrate. What?
Could still be a PSYOP.
No, I know, but listen, let me finish my point. Those top posters, right, were the ones that were part of them were in that dirty dozen, right, that the mainstream media was demonizing back in COVID. I mean, so these are like some of the top people that were pushing back, like the truth about cancer people. Like, well, you and I would go, there's some real good research in there from those
people. Real good. I mean, Suzanne, I have all her books.
Yeah. Right, exactly.
So I got this up on screen. I mean, just because talking about the King thing. This is the Hudson's Bay Company is in the process of going out of business, right? I mean, there's a big scandal today because they said they're going to give out $3 million in bonuses, but no one's getting any severance.
So no way.
Executives are getting $3 million and then the employees are getting nothing.
I can't, they would really do that in this day?
How can be, right?
Yeah, how can be?
I know the feeling. So Hudson Bay here, I'm just pulling this up because this is all the Hudson's Bay lab here.
Wow, that sucks. I'm stuck right in it. Or maybe that's good.
This might be good because this is Rupert's plant, which was sold to Canada by the Hudson's Bay Company.
When was that?
Well, let's check. I mean, this isn't a thing. So before everyone freaks out that I'm not ready for the segment, this is an on the fly thing, which we do sometimes. By 1967, the Dominion of Canada was formed.
1867.
Sorry, the Dominion of Canada was formed under the Confederation of Ontario, Quebec, New Brunswick, and Nova Scotia. This was partly due to the desire to expand the frontiers of the nation to the north and west. It was also a response to fears that the United States, which had purchased Alaska from Russia in 1867, was interested in annexing Rupert's Land for itself. At the same time, the HBC's governors, so the Hudson Bay Company's had governors, were increasingly aware that they did not have the funds to administer a vast territory that was increasingly becoming a place of European settlement. So the U.S. had paid $7.2 million for Alaska, which it turns out most Americans think included Yukon. That's what the Russia and America both think that Yukon was part of that deal. The HBC believed Rupert's Land was worth as much as $40 million. Canada did not have that kind of money, but the U.S. did. The British government, however, was also wary of American expansionism and would not allow any sale to the United States. Britain pressured the HBC to enter negotiations with Canada for the transfer of Rupert's Land. Two ministers in Macdonald's cabinet, George Etienne Cartier and William McDougall, were sent to London to make a deal. After 6 months of negotiations, the HBC agreed to transfer Rupert's Land to Canada for the bargain price of £300 or $1.5 million. This included continued HBC title or various trading posts. So
why so cheap if Alaska was so much? I don't get it.
Well, because it's a scam. This is what, I mean, the U.S. company.
Like a dollar, like, it's kind of like, hey, we'll give you a dollar for it. Like,
why is the Bay going out of business? I mean, what is going on? You know, I mean, there's probably tons of reasons for them to go out of business, but you know, it's just the timing is weird. We're talking the Hudson's Bay Company isn't just a company in Canada. It's a company that is literally, they own the place. They sold the place. It's half the reason Canada's here was because of this fucking company. So in 1870, the result of political arrangements brought about by the Red River Resistance, the province of Manitoba was admitted into Confederation. So yeah, then they added Saskatchewan that and all that. So it's just interesting time. So
let's just can you overlay a provincial map over top that Rupert's Land? Not just in our minds, just in your mind's eye, so that Rupert's Land.
Right here, so Manitoba's right here. It's all of Manitoba. It's all of Manitoba, and almost all of Saskatchewan and southern Alberta.
And southern Alberta, but also does it go to the where's the western border of that? Would it be Alberta?
This is probably the Alberta border right here.
Oh, it is. So it would be. You think?
Close, yeah. Or into BC, maybe a little bit.
Okay. You know? Okay. All right. Well, here's here's Alex Jones ranting.
Oh yeah, I listened to him going off about it. He's pissed.
Yeah.
Charter, and it is all Parliament. Back in 2013, I told that red coat globalist that was trying to take our guns, Piers Morgan, that if you try to take our firearms, 1776 will commence again. Well, now I've got to tell President Trump, if you try to put King Charles as the head of the U.S. government, ahead of the American people and our president, 1776 will commence again. When I learned this information earlier today, it was like a punch in the stomach. I couldn't even believe it. So I went and researched it, and it's true. And I've always promised viewers and listeners, I love Trump. Overall, I love what he's doing. But sometimes he does just the most terrible things. It's true. So we've all been wondering the last 3 or 4 days what this secret message, the King of England, the globalist, Mr. Great Reset, Mr. Carbon Tax, King Charles coming to visit Trump next week, what secret message he was going to be delivering from the British Prime Minister, Keir Starmer. It's hard to match King Charles's corruption evil, but Starmer actually does it, may even surpass him. I'll get to that in a moment. Trump has openly said and posted on Truth Social that the word is they're going to offer entrance of the United States of America into the UK British Crown Commonwealth with 50 plus other countries like Canada, New Zealand, Australia, British Virgin Islands. The list goes on and on. Now, you have to understand, they always advertise this, being associate member. Oh, it's just ceremonial. No, it's not. Whenever Trudeau just canceled Parliament so he can stay in office a few more months and bring in Carney, the former head of the Bank of England, the head UN climate envoy, he invoked the King of England and the Charter and the Governor General Charter, and it dissolved Parliament. So these so-called commonwealths that are independent, they're not independent. That's why they're all under censorship and control. And the UK is one of the most corrupt, evil governments now on earth, not to mention King Charles's brother and Epstein and then the king and Jimmy Savile and all the pedophilia. I mean, it's just beyond disgusting.
I mean, he's got a point there about the Commonwealth.
Yeah, I would agree.
So let me, we've heard enough of that, but let me just play and go back to, interesting, huh? It missed, let's see here. So it's, okay, before I speculate too much, did you think I was joking before I got the news? Here it is, the Daily Mail exposed secret offer King Charles is planning to make Donald Trump that would make America royal again. Oh, make America royal again. That's pretty funny, eh? King Charles isn't king. That's the plot twist here. Alex, Trump knows, Trudeau knows, they all know. We're doing a merger, North America Unity hashtag. God bless Donald Trump. And then here's some posts here. let me just see here. A million US per Canadian. How to become the Pope. What was the other one I was gonna look at? Anyways, What's your thought about with the pushback against Canada and the 51st state stuff? What if this is like a way to just like it was on purpose? Like, let's get them all riled up about us taking them over, but then they're going to take us over. Like, what if it's a way that Trump can say, well, no, the UK is buying us. Like, we are turning into the Commonwealth instead of Canada becoming 51st state. And then we sort of combine with the states underneath the UK umbrella, and then Trump gets his North America and he becomes king of North America. And, or, I mean, maybe, and King Charles becomes an emperor. I mean, I don't know. Like, how does it, you know, there might be some sort of monarchical resurgence here, especially when you hear about them talking about following the philosophy of Mencius Moldbug and some of these people that talk about a benevolent monarchy being the best solution right now because of the
way how he gets around the Constitution.
Exactly.
I don't think he can do that. You know what I mean?
Or is it just like, is it just a play then? Like, is it just like, oh, well, we still get to keep our Constitution, but we're going to be connected with the UK? Like, I mean, I don't
think they could ever do it. I think that Americans will freak out. I mean, they literally fought a war. That's what the War of 1776 is about leaving Britain.
But what if it's to get North America though, right? I mean, wouldn't that be a sacrifice? What if you could say we're gonna be under them, but we're gonna keep our constitution and we're gonna expand to North America? Would they?
I think that's I'll be pretty surprised. Crazy. Yeah, I don't think America has any interest in entering the Commonwealth.
Well, it wouldn't be like there'd have to be some caveats there, right?
Yeah, I think if anything, it's the North American Union and them getting into the North American Union over and above. I mean, you might not even see Greenland become a state because I don't think they're interested in having Greenland or Canadians or any of them vote in their elections because it's just not a good idea. But I do think that they do want them all sort of under some new thing. Europe's doing its own thing, right? You can see it all lining up again. There's not going to be a NATO anymore because Europe's going to do its own thing.
Well, that's kind of what I'm getting at, is this is part of the bigger reorganization of the planet, right? So it'd be the UK, all the English, the Commonwealth, the USA, the UK, and all the English, like, I don't know who the other 50 countries are that you mentioned. I mean, they're hard to imagine.
All over, like, South America and their little shitholes, you know? India's probably in there.
No, I don't think so.
But they would have been.
Maybe. You know what I mean? So maybe that's part of the reorganization. And then there'll be Russia and China and the, you know, the Middle East. I don't know. It's so weird. So then let's just finish off with this then. So, I mean, this is our political outsiders here, right? This is a shout out to Moose on the Loose. He does a really good, like, deconstruction of all this, and I just picked like the smallest little clip out of the middle of this because it's the title of our episode, Thanks Royal Highness. But his clip goes into like a lot of that stuff we talked about earlier, the net zero empire and the US antitrust crackdown. But guess who am I gonna play a clip of here that's gonna thank the King Charles? Yeah, buddy.
Carney.
Yeah, you're right.
Although, of course,
it wasn't hard guess.
Okay, so but this is King Charles is talking about what we talked about before. He's like leading the charge here, a part of the leading the charge into making people do the right thing when it comes to climate.
The momentum of the private sector and capital markets with net zero. This is the stark reality of the challenge we must tackle. Now,
Mark Carney must have whispered a lot in King Charles' ear.
Core, this ranking is a noble pursuit of the idea that business can and must be a force for good.
These guys are all virtue signaling, gas guzzling jets. They don't give a crap about
businesses can and must be a force for good.
But any of this, let's get real.
For the sake of a safer and more sustainable future, let us join forces and waste no more time.
Thank you so much, Your Royal Highness, for a generous and urgent introduction to our session today.
Just look at the company that she keeps. King Charles. So we take a look at this Corporate Knights YouTube.
That was That was Carney's wife. She's just thick in all of this stuff, right?
Wow.
Part of the Eurasia group, just on Zoom calls with King Charles. Thank you, Your Royal Highness. So much for the outsiders, right? Coming over to Canada. Oh, we're outsiders. Yeah, we're just chumming around with your king.
Outsiders. Well, I mean, speaking of Europe, they're just getting told to. The EU urges citizens to stockpile supplies to last 3 days instead of, I mean, what's the crisis? The store's closed for the weekend. If you're not stockpiling at least 3 weeks of food by this point, you're not paying attention. Well, anyway, the European Union today urged citizens across the continent to stockpile food, water, and other essentials to last at least 72 hours as war, cyber attacks, climate change, and disease increase the chances of a crisis. Which one do you think the highest?
War?
Probably war. They have war as not... they do have war and cyber attacks, which could also fit into war, I suppose. I just thought that kind of fit in with...
Yeah, totally. We're in a war. I mean, we are in an information war. I mean, this is why I'm so upset about the liberal rules-based order that's failed us. I mean, they could have had us. They could have had us, but they let us just flounder all these policies and bullshit, and the USA seems like the only bulwark against it, honestly.
This is from the thing today. So this is fresh off the grill.
So there'd be no more federal income tax. There'd be no GST. There'd be no excise tax. There'd be no carbon tax. There'd be no more equalization payments where taxes, pension, and UI benefits included. We send $70 billion plus a year to Ottawa and get less than $35 billion a year back from the rest of Canada, or Confederation as it's called. So imagine the wealth.
These are the Alberta separatists, by the way. So this is the delegation of Albertans that are, they've got 60,000 members, these guys, more than the CPC, heading down to, the CPC, more than the UPC, which is our ruling government right now.
And the prosperity of this province, with all of that money remaining in the province, remaining in the provincial economy. Mm-hmm. Imagine Alberta with control of its own immigration, so that where we have cities that don't have enough water, don't have enough electricity, don't have enough housing, that we can say, hang on, no vacancy, time out, until we sort out all the people that are presently here and we accommodate everybody that's here. Mm-hmm. And have a sensible immigration policy as opposed to what we've been dealing with.
What a concept.
In Alberta, where we're no longer being subject to arbitrary federal regulations because somebody in Ottawa doesn't like the shape of somebody's hunting rifle, that they just automatically declare all of our hunting rifles to be prohibited, illegal, and subject to seizure to be shipped to the front lines in the war of Ukraine, and other stupid ideas that have come out of Ottawa in the last several years. So I'm confident on those ideas alone, you know, getting rid of, like literally if we get rid of all federal taxation in Alberta, the take-home pay and the disposable income of every Albertan will more than double. Think about the fact that every time a working man or woman goes to the pump to fill up their truck, instead of paying $1.60 for diesel, they're paying 80 cents, which is what it should be. I mean, all of these things need to be explained to the public at large to truly internalize what the benefits from an economic perspective of an independent Alberta will be. As well as, from, and this is why we're going to Washington to talk to the U.S. administration with regard to their support for Alberta independence, from a U.S. perspective, why wouldn't they support U.S. independence or Alberta independence? President Trump recently announced at the joint session of Congress that he was fully in support of self-determination for Greenland. Surely we can hope that President Trump will also support self-determination for Alberta, because clearly it's in the U.S. interest to have a secure energy supply that isn't being subject to arbitrary regulation, production caps, emission caps, and all of these other things that Ottawa arbitrarily imposes on Alberta out of some misguided notion that anything we do in Canada is going to somehow offset all of the CO2 increases being put out by India and China, which dwarf all of our CO2 savings in Alberta and Canada on an annualized basis. So all of these things, you know, would be dealt with within a common sense Commonwealth of Alberta operating as an independent nation, where we're no longer subject to the idiotic whims of politicians in Ottawa who are influenced by people that belong to the investment club called the World Economic Forum, whose main purpose is simply to siphon tax dollars out of the hardworking pockets of citizens of Alberta for the benefit of many of their get-rich-quick schemes, like battery plants in Ontario and bug protein plants and all of the other foolishness that we've seen Alberta tax dollars going to subsidize. So for me, I see that this project is eminently sensible. I think we have more than enough support for it. Certainly the present government in Edmonton, the Daniel Smith's government, realizes that if there's 37% support for independence amongst the population at large, the support for independence within the UCP membership likely exceeds 60%.
That's probably enough of that one. I mean, speaking of Danielle Smith, though, she's finally seems to have gotten her groove back, maybe. I mean, this is probably the most tough talk coming to her mouth for a little while.
And I am now off to the U.S. yet again to try and speak to Americans, this time through the second largest podcaster in the world, whose audience is made up of exactly the people we need.
Who's that?
I don't know. Is it Rogan?
Is she going on Rogan?
I mean, I don't know. Who's the first? I mean, it could be that bullshit liberal thing. That's
one on No Agenda? Yeah. Let me check.
And I am now off to the U.S. yet again to try and speak to Americans, this time through the second largest podcaster in the world, whose audience is made up of exactly the people we need to persuade to convince their president to change course on tariffs against Canada. And what does Team Carney want me to do? They want me to abandon my post, remain in Alberta, and do absolutely nothing to defend our province. They want me to cower in the face of Eastern media pundits and politicians who favor political grandstanding to effective diplomacy. I'm fiercely criticized for going into the lion's den to change the hearts and minds of the very Americans that we need on Canada's side to avoid a trade war with the most powerful economy on earth. They want this lady and Alberta to just sit down and shut up. Well, here is my response to that. I will not be silent. Alberta will not be silent. We will not be pushed around and called traitors for merely having the courage to actually do something about our nation's and province's predicament other than merely indulging in self-righteous tantrums. And I, for one, will never be silenced by the party in Ottawa that has sold out our beloved province for the last 10 years with the help of their NDP collaborators.
I don't know whose podcast she's going on. It says she's going to Florida. To
Megyn Kelly. Oh, maybe PBD, maybe. Patrick Bet David, maybe, after the PPC guy was on there. I mean, he was, you know, he had the... let's make a bet. I think it's either Megyn Kelly or PBD or...
Is Megyn Kelly in Florida?
I don't know. I mean, who else would it be? It would be Rogan or them. I feel like I'm missing some obvious ones.
Especially the biggest one in the second biggest one in the world.
Yeah, exactly.
I can't find it.
It could be Tim Pool. Would it be Tim? No, it wouldn't be Tim Pool. Wouldn't be Steven Crowder, would it? No, I mean, yeah, it's just, I don't know. It's hard to know how you measure these things, right? I mean, they're all the measurements are whoever. I mean, these mainstream people can. Oh, Sean Ryan, maybe, but I don't think that's. Yeah, that's who I was thinking of, though.
I can't see him doing it. Seems weird, but we'll see. Anyway, that's I thought that was kind of interesting. Both those clips I got from Marty up north. I don't know. I don't think I have anything else pressing.
All right, I'm going to share the rest of my list here then. Just I'm going to whip through these kind of like, what do you call that when you go through them all quickly? It's
I do have another, maybe do another show Friday, though.
This is from Marty up north. Holy shit, Canada is almost dead last. We're in third world territory in terms of economic performance. This graph has been going around like fire, so I thought I'd share it just for our listeners, too. How can a country with so many incredible resources be so poor? That's from Marty, and this is from the OECD, and he's sharing Trevor Tomes comparing GDP capita growth across the OECD countries over the past decade. So 10 years, OECD, GDP per capita. So it's per person, right? Like this is, and I don't really agree with the GDP. Like, so the 100,000 government employees that we've hired, which we pay for as taxpayers, is included probably in that GDP. Actually, you'd have to help me with that. Am I wrong about that?
I don't know.
So here's the USA about a third of the way down at 18.2%. Is that Ireland, Poland, Turkey at the top, like 40% around there? Then the USA, then it goes all the way down, 13%, 10%, 6%. And then at the very bottom, the second to last is Canada at 1.4%. So I'm not saying I agree with the way they measure it, but you know, this is what they're using to measure it. It's still bad that we're way down there.
Wasn't that GDP per capita?
Yeah. Yeah. But I don't like the way they measure GDP. I mean, I don't agree with that, but it's, that's why.
A measurement of something. I mean,
I know. That's what they've been using for all these years. And it's still, it's still a relevant comparison there. So this is one of, I don't know. I thought I'd show you this. This is who's coming, joining Carney's office as senior advisor on foreign defense and security policy, right? That's his wife there, Catherine McKenna, I think. Let me just shut that off here. Yes, Catherine McKenna's husband, Scott Gilmore. This is what he wrote. Alt left violently coming at the alt right circa 1944. Huh. I think he's got that backwards. Yeah. Or? He's got, hard to say. You know, he's trying to say the left and the right. This is Sean Rickard. I just wanted to get your opinion on some of these last little things here. It's now been 9 months. I've been waiting to receive my RPAL, that's the firearms license, after taking and passing all tests and exams, paperwork received by RCMP, and fee charged to my credit card, and including several follow-ups. Where is everyone else at in 2025 with receiving their PAL or RPAL? My son waited for over a year. Every inquiry was met with, "It's in progress." I think the way it works is you get your PAL first and you're eligible to your RPAL. Da, da, da. Let me just close this off here. You don't get your RPAL right away, just a PAL. I took my RPAL and got it within 60 days. Well, that's good. 45 days. Well, that's not bad. I wonder why it's taking so long.
How long ago was that, though? I mean, mine took 8 months.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Huh. 36 months for PAL, this guy says. Decided not to go for RPAL. What's the difference between PAL and RPAL?
One's handguns and shit.
Okay. So this is another one I've been holding on to here. Chanel Fowl. Today, the Ontario College of Teachers announced that they are investigating me for the fourth time. They've compiled pages and pages of my apparently problematic tweets and direct quotes from podcasts. I guess we're sort of stuck in this career now, eh? I'll share a bunch of examples in this thread. So she criticized the Pride decor at, for starters, we have my tweet that reads "Pride decor at Toronto High School" with a picture of the school's chalk art. Whoever's in charge of the school at X account must have violated the same rules when they originally posted this photo. So, I mean, all she said is she just posted it and said Pride decor, right? Are you with me? This is unbelievable, right? Next, I posted this tweet by a Toronto VP and pointed out that the TDSB is the largest school board in Canada. So they can't, you can't even just say normal things, right? Here's her trans day of remembrance tweet. I remember when a trans identified female walked into a school and murdered 6 innocent people. Da, da, da. This tweet shared a poster made by students at a Toronto school and quoted a line from it is also part of the investigation. So she shared a poster, quoted a line from the poster. But I guess if you're just sharing any of this content, but you don't conform to the ideology, they'll investigate you. You're in trouble. And this is where we're at.
I'll finish up your clip blitz with WestJet pilot asked judge to nix approval of temporary foreign workers in the cockpit. So we had a 60 permits for pilots from India and South Africa under the temporary foreign workers program. It seems like they're just trying to, I guess this guy's argument is that they were just trying to save money. And this one will hit you directly. I mean, this one hits you close to home. Canada should raise the retirement age to 67 to address the labor shortages. The public think tank based out of Toronto says the change will put Canada in line with successful international models. Life expectancy has increased by 10 years. So this is important to consider all these factors.
Has it come down again, though, since it went up?
Yeah, but you're still working longer, buddy. Forget it. Ain't getting out of it. Ain't getting out of it. So anyway, that's it. That's the show. That's
all right. Show.
That's what we got. So support it. If you like it, sign up at grimeamericaoutlawed.ca.
I'll share some of the stuff we talk about.
Or the alist.ca. Oh, shit, I put it in the wrong one. Yeah, we got to figure out what outro we're going to put on these normally. So check out the alist.ca. Of course, you can sign up for this show there and everything else. And there's ways to support us there as well. And if you're in the Outlawed audience, head over to grimeamericaoutlawed.ca and sign up over there. Get the extensions and everything else. And then we just came out with episode 700 on the Grimerica show. 700 episodes over 12 years. Dan Richards from Joe Rogan fame was just on there. People want to check that out, grimerica.ca and grimericacbd.com for CBDs, tinctures, and gummies, all that sort of fun stuff. And contact at thecabin.com for trips and events. There's still some room left on that Randall Carlson trip coming up, and we might do an Easter Island thing, and you should get signed up for the newsletter at a minimum. And of course, head to adultbrain.ca for all those audiobooks, ebooks, print books, whatever you need, adultbrain.ca. We got you covered. Other than that, we hope you enjoyed the show. We love you guys. Thanks for listening, and we will see you next week.
Who's gonna kill this sacred cow? You were never political anyhow. Since when did you start trusting in the government? Since when was it okay to ridicule and shame your neighbor? Your opinions have become as fickle as artificial flavors. What matters most to you? What the TV host told you to do? Or a moral compass that points true north, oh true. Who's gonna kill this sacred cow? You were never religious anyhow. Since when did you kiss the ring on the hand of the Pope? Since when do we need pharmaceuticals to cope? Your soul has become, ever-loving soul has become, as brittle as communion wafers. What matters most to you? What the Holy Ghost told you to do? Or a moral compass that points true north, oh true. I'm gonna kill this sacred cow. Bureaucrats think I'm non-essential anyhow. Since when has our culture become so lowbrow? It's all touchscreens, and nobody has any know-how. Your idea of fun is taking 1,001 photos of your duck face. Matters most to you what the celebrity's post told you was cool, or a moral compass that points true north, oh true. I'm gonna kill this sacred cow. I'm gonna kill your 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 sacred cow. I'm gonna kill. I'm gonna kill. gonna kill, I'm gonna kill, I'm gonna kill, I'm gonna kill your sacred cow. I'm gonna kill, I'm gonna kill, I'm gonna kill your sacred cow.